Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, baby, make it hot. Ride the cop till you hit the spot. Come on, baby, make it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee. Wow, 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 yippee yo, yippee yay, bow wow, yippee yo, yippee.
And welcome to a unusually, and I would rather say, particularly unusually calm EXO Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah.
April 30th.
You sound a little manic-y there.
Well, you know, my usual hour before the show where I spend most of my time spelunking the CVSs and various snack bars, I actually completed my tour at 8:40.
Very nice.
Giving me 20 minutes of free time before the show is a dangerous thing, but, you know, it's the end of the first quarter. All the books have to be in order, and, you know, I got a little corporate. I got my EXO hat on and can't find the lease, but, you know, what do you want? I'm an eco.
No, that happens. Did you get anything good to snack on?
Oh, the snacking food was good, yeah. Actually, this is a discount. If you're anyone in the area looking for some divine, absolutely divine cookies, that's what they're called, 33% more free at the CVS.
Such an ass.
There's about three left, three boxes left. They were going like hotcakes. I actually sold one. I should get a commission. Some other safe was going to get a Mrs. Fields, that ripoff. I said,
that's
no,
funny.
Look at this, man. You get 33% more for free. And then, ooh, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to give a shout-out to the health chat that I'm in. Some of my friends are listening to the show tonight. So, hello. There you go.
Yeah, well, let's see. I had a song I wanted to spit out.
I have something uploaded that you asked me to do before, too, so...
Oh, well, wait a second here, because
yeah, it's there.
You know, no. Hang on a second.
I'm not going anywhere.
The Napster is yawning and waking itself up. But, you know, because we do discuss mental capacity a lot on this show, so I just wanted to get this out of this week for some of the things I've seen in the news that we might be touching on, so let's see if it'll boot up for us here.
Alex just gave me a shout back from the chat room.
And my head might be scratching while my thoughts are busy hatching if I only had a brain.
There we go.
Yeah, but you know, I could have got the bird to do that for you.
We have all hours. So, along those lines. Along those lines, that way we'll segue. This is my attempt to segue.
Mm-hmm.
Last night on HBO, home of the critically acclaimed John Adams series, which I still think is settling in my bloodstream, we got to get some John Adams quotes on here that just, you know, laps into. Bob Costas hosted a town meeting, as it were, about the state of sports and the media, in the country, and all these new changes that have come on. He had like a big panel, 90 minutes of stuff. And at one point, this is a little funny because it's like, you know, it's like seeing your kindergarten teacher, you know, renting a porn video. You know, like the things don't match up.
Oof, I mean, was a nun.
Well, all right. Well, let's just get crazy here, but I'm just saying that. When you see someone like Bob Costas, who's, you know, host of the Olympics, and he's like, you know, everyone knows who Bob Costas is. When you see him just, you know, basically just run on his mouth like a Tourette's person, it kind of makes you stand up like the deer in the headlights. And I was just like, you know, watching the show and kind of going into my little TV haze, and all of a sudden Bob Costas says, go ahead, play it.
Oh, okay.
He's talking about a guy that's reacting to a guy that left ESPN, and this is his letter, basically, or his comment he posted on the blog, directed at the guy that quit ESPN, and basically his good riddance letters. Again.
All right. Any kids in the room? Put your hands over their ears.
9 o'clock. We're on Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
Grow some skin.
Good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag.
Good luck managing a Denny's, douchebag.
No, that's Bob Costas. Come on. And, of course, he's reading someone else's, you know, stuff, but it's just, I swear, there was a moment there where I wanted to cry. No, no. Bob Costas doesn't know that word. So I just thought that was amusing.
He does
beyond,
now.
Beyond belief it was amusing, but it was mm-hmm. just, so here we are. And really, kind of going right to the heart of what tonight's program is going to be about, it's really about the hypocrisy that we all live in this culture. Because as we've discussed many times, people pursue health and well-being on various paths. And some take the allopathic approach to things. You know, drugs, potions, little creams and powders and all kinds of fun things to sort of ward off the evil symptoms. Other people take more of the, you know, natural kind of stuff, and they're still treating symptoms, but they do it with their aloe and their little, you know, skin moisturizers and all that other little things. But we want to get into a little bit about the theater of the way drugs roll out in the culture, because they do. I mean, that stupid bee that's on TV now with the Mexican face and the accent, I forget what drug it's for.
Oh.
What drug? It's one of the allergy drugs.
Yeah. Oh.
They sneeze a lot. Anyway, this freaking bee shows up. It's on TV a lot, and every time I see it, I just say, I just scream in my mind, like, why does this work? Why do people see the bee by the drug? Are they that simple? And then it just, you know, calms me down, because of course they are. And it's like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're selling a cereal or if you're selling a condom or Viagra has a theme song. So we're going to actually have a guest that worked for the production companies that made those things and hired those kinds of people to put together basically a brand marketing kind of a thing around those things, and then, you know, was on the inside of that industry and now has pulled a complete 180 and gone into a different career path. So we're going to get into that when she calls in. And I'm just, like I said, I think this is one of those things where the public kind of knows it's happening. It's sort of like overt, but at the same time, it's completely subversive in a way, because it's like, even though you know that this is, like, when they read those hundreds of symptoms at the end of those commercials, may cause drowsiness, headaches, explosion, you know, all the things at the end, people still take the drug. So it's like if they said to you on a scroll very slowly, you know, this drug has been shown to cause seizures and hemorrhoids, and, you know, it's like all of a sudden the relief you're getting for the allergy medicine or whatever isn't so palatable, but I just find it kind of amusing. The whole thing is just, all the treatment of symptoms is kind of funny to me. Because the symptom really just means that you're alive, mm-hmm. and your body is trying to do its best. And for the most part, we have to learn how to support it, not try to, you know, silence it. It's almost like the librarian in the, you know, in the library with the little kids in the summer reading club. Shh, telling the body all the time. Shh, and they, you know, they just figure out another way to bother you. I was very good at the dropping of paper clips to really, really annoy the librarians in the summer. The only place was air conditioning.
Nasonex.
Nasonex, fellas, keeping score at home. Yes, and I say to Nasonex,
good riddance, fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's, douchebag.
He sounds like a very XO reading it. He's a philo. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, he really...
Very mechanical.
He must have had to go in there to do it. Hey, can you check your... what do you call it? Your board, and look under number 2 and see if you see anything.
It's blank.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned about that.
Why, the mystery guest might not be able to call in?
Well, I don't know if they did call in, and it's just coming up blank.
Why don't you click upon it?
I could do that.
See if a magical voice appears.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. My pal Posty in the room is asking to hear my voice. Hello.
Some segue music here.
Hello?
Aha. Uh-huh. There is someone there.
Wait a minute. No, wait for the whistle.
Oh, God, Amy.
There you go.
All right.
Well, she was in there all the time.
I can't believe that. This stupid switchboard. Oh.
Maybe it's one of those unknown numbers. It doesn't want anyone to know that it's there. And it masks it.
Yeah, apparently.
And I heard everything you said.
Well, we've been talking. Yeah, hopefully you're one of the few listeners. Well, this is an archive show. Everyone listens to this thing like basically at 6 o'clock in the morning when they're, you know, feeding their fish or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we need the horn. Get the horn.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll get it.
Crash busted.
Yeah. All right. Wait a second. This stupid computer. Oh, here it is.
All right. So the Soma submarine has taken from port, and we are welcome to the show is Amy Houseman. Hello, Amy.
Hello.
Hey, Amy.
Hi there.
Hello. That was good.
That was good.
Yeah. So, do you know about this Mason XB?
I've seen it many times. I think that's Antonio Banderas' voice, actually.
I think it is, too. Oh, my God. So they made the face kind of like him, like they do in the cartoons, too. So I got to
exactly.
watch that thing.
Exactly.
Oh, no, she's got the commercial.
That's him.
That is him. Oh, my God. So from Shrek 3 to this. Okay. But the thing is that something that you guys storyboard? Like, how can we make this drug, you know, seem safe and palatable? And say, okay, here's a drug that causes 97 side effects, but it does give some people some, you know, decongestion relief. So we'll have a little bee buzz in and suggest that maybe instead of suffering with their allergies, they take this med. Is that the whole storyboard of that kind of thing? You sit around, that's what gets thrown on the dartboard and say, we're gonna go this way with it or what?
Kind of. There's a well, in my previous career, let's start by saying that.
Yes.
They would usually, for something like a TV commercial, they would hire an ad team for that, which that's not what I was a part of. I was part of a production company that did do certain videos and films and things more along marketing, not so much mainstream advertising like you would see on TV.
Uh-huh.
Also, the mainstay of our product package, I would say, was a lot of the live rollout of the products, which included you take a sales force of 3,000 people, you take them out of the field for about a week, bring them to a nice, you know, a nice resort type of atmosphere place and feed them and, you know, give them good food and drink and golf time and teach them about the drug. And part of what we did was how they would sell it. We would construct many in-depth role plays of what to say and how to spin it. Absolutely.
Wow. Hmm. So just give us a typical idea. What, like, common drug, just, I don't know, I'm picking Viagra out of a bale of hay here, but I'm just saying, when they roll out a drug like that, when it first came out, it was like people were going blind, seeing blue stuff, having heart attacks, a lot of, you know, not like the welcome mat was out for this thing. And then now you got Cialis and some of the other ones. But when they went out and rolled out the drug, what would they spend to train people how to do what you just said on
well,
a party
depends.
Like that?
Well, first of all, I'm really not allowed to name any names, whether it's an actual drug name or the company itself. But I can say that I did do some drug launches that ultimately the drug was pulled due to a few too many fatalities a few years later.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so that was, of course, an unfortunate thing. The interesting thing is sometimes the drugs might get approved with what's called a black box label, which is they haven't done the full extent of testing yet or they're still figuring out certain things, let's just say, so they could release it with certain caveats, that kind of thing.
Okay, so what would they spend on one of these exotic parties? They bring them down to, you know, to some resort somewhere. What's the budget for entertaining the troops, so to speak?
Oh, the budget could be in the millions.
Whoa!
Yeah, absolutely.
Millions?
You have to figure that if you're going to take, let's say, about 3,000 people is the sales force. Just the sales force.
Get my calculator.
Right. And then you're going to take all the managers and all the corporate people from corporate office, and you're going to fly them to one spot, and you have to wine them and dine them for, let's say, a week.
Okay.
You know, that alone is probably, over a million right there. I don't have a calculator in front of me, but
that's
a lot.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, nice resort, you know, $200 a night, 3,000 people, meals, everything. Yeah, okay.
Sure, and that's even if people share rooms, which they do, it's very often that they would. You'll have to bunk with your fellow colleagues, but even then, I mean, you're talking over $1 million there. What I would do, I didn't have anything to do with, let's say, the napkins and tablecloths and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mine was really, my company and the company I worked for was really about the production aspect and training these sales reps. And what used to be a way more lax kind of situation where we would build these lavish and actually quite beautiful sets. And we would hire actors, and we would put on live game shows. So imagine, if you will, you're walking into a huge ballroom, and it's as literally as if you're on the set of Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune or Hollywood Squares, with an actor playing the host. And let's say it was Hollywood Squares, you have lookalikes who are playing, you know, Lily Tomlin or Steve Martin. And so you're paying all these people, all these entertainers, to learn lines. You're hiring writers to write the lines. You're hiring a whole crew to build the set. I mean, it's a really huge production.
So it's
and that
Hollywood.
Could be,
wow.
It's real, yeah, and that could be for one workshop in a day that has four or five workshops in a week that has 5 days worth of meetings.
Wow.
So that's a lot. That's a big budget. And that was the kind of stuff we did.
So just taking a satellite photo of this, the money spent on rolling out one drug and one drug company that trained one sales force could pay for the insurance of millions of people to get health care.
Probably. But you have to remember, that was a long time ago. And
rules
and regulations have changed, and things have changed, and that's true. They needed to change. So what ended up happening in the industry as I was growing up in it was that there were a lot of regulations that said you couldn't spend this and you couldn't do that, and you couldn't have a budget over such and such amount unless it was for training purposes. So what happened was a lot of the production companies, including the one that I worked for, started gearing themselves towards sales training or product training. And they needed to then kind of get more in the know about the actual products or the pharmaceuticals. And where we went from hiring creative directors, we still did that, but now we were also writing medical writers and people who either went to medical school or went to medical school and dropped out because they decided they didn't want to do that anymore. But people who had a fair amount of some kind of medical background or training, because now these were the people who were either supervising or consulting or writing or all of the above, these now sort of training-based programs. So as long as we were saying that we were training people, we could still keep a creative spin on it. But it was still a big budget, I won't lie.
Yeah, it just, like I said, the numbers are staggering when you think about what people do on the allopathic side that don't have any insurance that will, you know, they'll pay for, you know, for their meds and things like that, that they're out of their pocket. And the sales force that's being trained to go out in the field to basically sell to the docs, you know, they're being treated almost like royalty. They're getting, you know, schmoozed and the people that they recruited to sell these things. I used to bump into my old building across the street here because there was a MD on the third floor that had drug reps coming up there almost every other day. They dealt a lot with allergies. They were basically models, actors, former athletes, cheerleaders. You know, they weren't exactly like biochemists that I saw. I don't know if in your particular experience it was different, but you know, I'd ask them what they were selling. What's in the magic bag today? And they went right into their spiel. And if you asked them, you know, that does the kidneys, you know, there was never any, you know, like more than one line about it. And you've always felt you were dealing with someone that pretty much already had their customer sold. They were just going to basically drop off the next sample and create this sort of, I guess, reverberating circuit where you had drug company, drug rep, and then MD, and then, of course, the end user. And Did you ever encounter in the whole production aspect where there was, you said there was like a reform in the way that they had to kind of, I guess, kind of like write off the way they were getting these meetings done. But where there was any attention to the fallout, like as some of these lawsuits started rising up with Vioxx and something, did they ever spend any extra time talking about the damage some of these drugs do, so that these reps were not going in kind of like flying blind, or they just left that out? They just said, it's in the Merck manual, leave us alone.
It really depends. A lot of the times when a rep will go into a doctor's office, one of the things a rep often encounters is the doctor saying, and how does this go against the competition? So a lot of the times when the sales reps, let's say, are doing practice sales calls, practicing their pitch, so to speak, they will often sort of, I'm not going to say pick apart the competition, but try and show how their product is better than the competition. For instance, how many antihypertensive medications, how many cardiac medications are on the market today? Do we need that many? A lot of them do the same thing, but one is better, it lasts longer, or it goes farther, or it doesn't have this side effect that the competition does, or so on and so forth. It really depends. Its mechanism of action is different. It's not toxic to the liver. I mean, who knows? Yeah. But a lot of the times, depending on what the actual product is, they'll basically use it as, this is where it's better than the competition, or this is where no other product can do this, or this actually also cures your migraines, whatever. So it kind of depends what it is. In regards to something that, let's say, might have been dangerous or toxic, they are trained how to deal with the questions if the doctor brings the questions up, because the doctors are informed. And they hear about it, or they read about it, they know what's going on, they have to know what's going on. So they'll ask a rep, well, I heard that this might cause heart attacks or arrhythmias, you know, whatever. So the sales reps are very often trained how to address those kinds of questions when they come up.
But ultimately it's about sales. It's not really about, you know, the necessity of these things. The necessity is pretty much established. It's like, how do we make this, you know, functional in the marketplace is really what it comes down to. Cause,
exactly.
You know,
just like if you were selling copy machines.
Right, yeah.
Why is this copy machine better than the other? They both maybe print 25 pages a minute, but why is this one better? The resolution's better, whatever it is. It's the same thing. It's about how do you clinch the sale.
Yeah. So
and that's really what it is. And, you know, the companies will spend millions of dollars to train everyone and bring someone out of the field and train them all if they know they're going to make $4 billion that year.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this speaks to a big problem in healthcare today. So the average person can't afford healthcare because a certain procedure is thousands of dollars because that piece of equipment that is being used to perform that procedure is, you know, $500,000 or something like that, because it has to be due to the fact that all the money that went into research and development and marketing and advertising to make that product, these companies have to charge that money to get it back. I mean, it's your typical corporate kind of
thing.
Yeah,
right. So no wonder they were crazy when they see the generics are getting attention and people are getting drugs from Canada and on the Internet, and all their marketing effort and all their, you know, Hollywood campaigning is being undercut by that competition. And then they say, well, see, what happens usually is then they go to, they get legislation against it because they've got everybody in their hip pocket down there to say, hey, we can't have this unfair competition coming in with this generic stuff because, A, it's more affordable, and, B, it's more accessible to the end user. They don't have to go through the MD to get it. So it just seems like I never really thought about it in terms of just like, basically, it's widgets. It's a typical corporate environment. The product is basically just, almost irrelevant. It's just about how are we going to move X to Y and make sure that that we don't suffer too much backlash and we can beat the competition to the countertop. It's and it doesn't seem like there's much heart and soul to it. It seems pretty nuts and bolts.
But even with generics, it comes down to this question, and that is, again, with generics, what is it that I'm putting in my body? A generic mm-hmm. what?
Yeah,
most
right.
of us, most of us don't even know. And to me, that is the real, that's the real concern I have with healthcare, not only in the United States, but in the world today, is people who have just totally given up their power or not even knowing that they have the power to be informed themselves, to know what it is, to know their own, to know our own bodies, really, and what my body needs. Instead,
and how does someone, you know, where do they get the training to do that? I mean, most people,
well,
you know,
over-the-counter
and all.
I think in some ways it's social conditioning that teaches us to unlearn these things. I mean, think about it. When you look at a young child who falls down and scrapes his knee or stubs his toe or whatever, puts his hand on a hot stove or hot surface, the first thing, and we even do this as adults, the first thing we do when we get a boo-boo is we put our hand on it. Like, ouch,
mm-hmm.
that hurts. And then instinctively our hand goes to the area where that hurt or that pain is. And right there, we're doing a form of what people might call therapeutic touch, energetic healing, whatever it is. And it's something that we're all born with the capability of doing, but somehow, somewhere along the lines, we've been socialized to think that the only people who really know how to heal us or make us better are doctors.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think that we have the ability to do it ourselves. Or if we do, we think we're very limited with it. For instance, how many of us, we get a small cold and we think, oh, I have a cold, I have the sniffles, I'll drink some tea or I'll make some ginger tea or something for my tummy, and that's okay. Because we say, oh, it's not so bad, I can do it myself. But the minute any one of us gets something that is a little more pain than we're comfortable with, or something that just doesn't quite feel right, rather than thinking the same thing, which is, what can I do for myself to help myself now? And again, whether it's prayer therapy, our own hands-on healing, other modalities or disciplines such as acupuncture, chiropractic, what we do is we immediately go to the doctor and say, fix it, fix me, help me. I don't know what this is, and we get a pill.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look, doesn't it start early on when the kid pops out and how many vaccines does the kid get in 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, and
mm-hmm.
first sign of any trouble, the kid gets prophylactic antibiotic, which is
right.
the biggest oxymoron I ever came across the street. So we're constantly saying, you're not enough, your body's weak, and you need this to get by. And especially when you're dealing with third world countries that now, of course, have our thimerosal problem. We just took the thimerosal out of our childhood vaccines here and stuck it in the ones that go to foreign countries because
yeah,
they don't have an FDA.
Nice. That's
right.
nice.
Yeah. Well, we pass on the mutations and the, you know, the autism to them.
Right.
You know, so it's like there's, to me, there's two levels of holes in the fence here. One is that there's just an omnipotence and an arrogance on the part of the pharmaceutical companies because their lobby is so just unbelievably powerful. And they're unapologetic about it. I mean, they really have a center for disease control, not a center for health. It's a center for disease control. They have a National Institutes of Health that studies what? That studies disease. So
mm-hmm.
the whole thing is backwards. And then you have a population that is a bunch of symptom-chasing, you know, frightened elves that will take anything to ward off any discomfort at any level. So perfect marriage. You got the irresponsible public and the unaccountable authorities. So, you know, to me, it's just like the March of the Wooden Soldiers. You know, they just, you know, everybody just locksteps in, and it's pretty much Pied Piper right off the cliff. And, I mean, you just take any disease, diabetes, any of those things, they've all moved down two and three generations to now you get to the point now where the precursors are getting, you know, earlier and earlier, and you're starting to see kids develop, you know, signs of morbid obesity and then morbid conditions with blood pressure and things like that when they're 12, 13, 14 years old. So I don't know. I don't see a lot of health supportive activity like you're talking about where people understand there is a self-regulating aspect to their well-being and people do it with emotions. I mean, they take things just for fear, just for anxiety, just for depression, you know, Val deals with it all the time in mental health, where people are afraid to have any kind of abnormal sensation in their that affects their thoughts.
Well,
worry.
Look at the stupid the commercials that they have now for all the mental health medications. Like, are you depressed? Pop this. Hello. Talk it out. Deal with whatever it is that's pissing you off or upsetting you. Don't take a pill that just puts a Band-Aid on it, and then you never fix it.
Well, I mean, things like anger. I mean, all these things and worry and all the things that you go through in a typical day, all of them have a med attached to it at this point, or they have a management for it. You know, there's anger management. There's people that deal with phobias. And it's a constant sort of like, I want to get back to normal. And that's what I think, you know, and maybe there's something you can tell us about, because we'll take a 180 here and talk about your evolution that you've gone through here as you've a new graduate of Pacific University and going out into the world of to be a holistic practitioner. When people define normal in your former environment, was asymptomatic associated with normal? That's not their client, someone who's quote-unquote feeling normal. Unless they want to live Viagra for the weekend, you know.
Sure.
But when they describe someone like the MDs, they usually tend to say if someone's within normal limits, they don't give them any meds. They just say, we'll test you again until we find something wrong with you. But they don't know how to enhance normal to make it so that someone is actually going to be maybe better than the average bear. And so that's when you get into the other side of the coin where, like, performance enhancement stuff comes in, and steroids and HGH and all those things the athletes are getting in trouble for it getting beyond normal. They're not sick, but they're on the other end. And so when you see it on the holistic side, you know, someone can walk in to a massage, you know, licensed massage therapist or someone doing deep tissue work or something like that, and they could quote-unquote say and feel that they're normal. No symptoms, I'm fine. Get on the table. There's no prerequisite to getting on the table to have that kind of care. There is for, you know, internists and GPs and things like that. You got to have the sore throat. You got to have the, you know, the runny eyes or the earache or the fever or whatever it is. So, I don't know. It seems like on the holistic side, normal is a fluid thing that almost is something that can be as broad and as deep as the client allows for it. And it's set on the standards of the individual, where on the allopathic side, it's measured. Like, you look at a lab report, there's a range for every stinking thing that they measure, and if you're outside that range, you're abnormal. And it's just common. So it's like the first thing that has to go is that word, because when I ask people, I've given up asking them what health is, what's normal? And they'll give you a definition that usually means something associated with them and a population of people that they don't know. So it's a common finding. It really, if they said it was common or uncommon, that would be more accurate. So just curious, did they ever discuss asymptomatic or normal in the rollout of these drugs where it wouldn't be indicated or, you know, this is not the population you want to drop these drugs on? Did they ever give that kind of a wrap to it, or they didn't address it?
It depends.
Okay.
You know, for instance, I'm sure you've heard on TV commercials, certain side effects are normal.
Yes,
calling
yes.
The side effects normal.
That's exactly the language is backwards. It's like, so you have this symptom, but that's normal. We expect that.
Right. So a couple. So I have a couple of things to say about what normal is. First of all, a lot of times when somebody says to me they feel normal or they seem normal, to me, normal is equated with familiar. It doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy. So
right.
That's the first thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, when you say normal or what's within normal limits, it's pretty easy to define that when maybe you're measuring someone's range of motion, okay? Their arms should move this way, their legs should move that way. That's within normal limits range of motion. But to say feeling normal mentally or my stomach feels normal, maybe feeling normal for someone is to have a stomach ache every day or to have slight stomach distension every day. Now, to that person, that's normal. To me, that's not normal.
Yeah, normal's a good word for traffic conditions. You know, it really has nothing to do with health.
And
that's why I always find it that you're right. They do twist it. Again, this is the 180, like Center for Disease Control. The normal side effects.
Right,
It's like, all it means is the population they tested, when they had to get it one point above 50 that the lethal dose was, they found this was the normal reaction, or the most common finding. I find it kind of, people blow it off.
Well, which
like,
is... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. I'm just saying 80% of the symptoms that they give you are side effects from the drugs and the potions and lotions they're taking
exactly.
most of the time.
Exactly, that's very
And then
true.
They give you more drugs to address those.
Right, and then next thing you know, you're on a cocktail of all kinds of things.
Yep.
Yeah,
but,
and people off-label, too. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Rogaine became so popular. It was a blood pressure medication, and people grew some hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just, wow. All right, so putting all that to the off to the side, parallel universe, when you were working with these companies, you were doing some pretty highfalutin, as we would call it, woo, types of stuff in your own personal life. And so you're completely lived almost like, you had the job at work, production job at work, like I said, just widgets, whatever. And then you were doing things that were, I would say, let's just say they were hyper-normal for the population in terms of your spiritual development, things like that. So you were on a different path even back when you were working for these companies. Why don't you give us a little bit of a kind of a lead in that, what maybe caused the break from that work environment?
Well, it's true, yes. For about 10 years, I was kind of living in two worlds simultaneously. I was very much in the production world, which I loved doing production. That's what I went to college for. I was a major in acting and directing of visual and performing arts. So that was something I always wanted to do. Just kind of by default or by fluke, I ended up doing production for these large corporations, 95% of them being pharmaceutical corporations, because, again, simply they were the ones who had the money. Maybe the other 5% were investment bankers and, like, you know, booze.
mm-hmm.
But most of them were the pharmaceutical companies. Now, at the same time, being the seeker that I was, and I guess asking the question in myself, why be normal? I always felt like there was more, and I did then enroll in a school that was in New York City at the time and start practicing what I called integrative energy medicine. I went to a school called the I Am School of Healing Arts, and the modality is basically Sufi-based, kind of like a laying on of hands energy work. People might refer to it as something that looks like Reiki, therapeutic touch, hands-on healing, energy medicine. You'll hear many people call it different things, and it all looks kind of similar.
Sounds like Professor Val's side of the coin. She
dabbles
in the Reiki. Yeah.
Right. So, and it's very similar to that. And it's really about setting the intention, and wholeness healing is another way of describing it. And I was doing that for about 10 years. And doing that just on myself and the few people around me before I didn't even hang a shingle yet at this time. I was still enrolled in the school, and then I became a teacher at the same school after I had completed my program, and had a very small group of people that I worked with, but experienced some rather profound changes in my life. And whatever ways in which I think all humans have some kind of psychic ability, albeit to different degrees, but we all come in with some sort of knowing, some sort of intuition and sensitivity. I mean, even to the degree of now, let's say you are the most right side person, but you still have the ability, you can walk into a room full of people, and we all do this. You know how we'll say, you know, the vibe in that room, sometimes we'll say, it was just a really weird vibe, I didn't like it, or what a nice, peaceful vibe. That's still an energy that you're picking up on, and we all do it, but it's just to what degree. So here I was, once again, relearning something that we all come in with, but I had just started getting more and more sensitive to as I was practicing the energy work. And as I was doing it on other people, there were some magnificent changes, whether somebody came because, oh, I have a headache, can you help me with my headache? Or, oh, you know, I'm going through chemotherapy right now, and I'm really sick, can you help me with that? Or, oh, I just found out I'm HIV positive. And there were some pretty profound changes with people. It was amazing. And
well, again, like I said, you're now dealing with more like what a homeopath looks at, which is the whole person, rather than just the symptom or just the, you know, condition that they're dealing with. It's how they experience that thing. So someone that has a allopathic view of their health, where everything is about space invader, germ, getting the news that they're HIV positive, some of them psychosomatically will break out with horrible symptoms within a couple hours of learning that, because it's a nocebo. They're like pointing the bone, like it's like the death finger coming at you. And some people will be like, all right, I have antibodies.
Well,
they won't panic. Same news, but different value system. And so you're picking up on their emotional connection that they're making as they relate to you, which is that's not in the pill bottle. I mean, that's a heart-to-heart thing that I would say is pretty rare in the experience of most people out there trying to get care for those kinds of conditions.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the same thing with cancer. People are walking around symptom-free, then they find out somewhere in their body there's cancer, and then the next thing you know, they have all the symptoms and they're sick.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. But, yeah, you know, it was back then when I started doing this energy medicine, which, again, the whole foundation, the whole premise is about seeing the person as whole, seeing them in their wholeness. So you're not just looking at that person as an entity of disease. They might have some kind of pathological thing within them or around them or whatever it is, but yet there's that wholeness, that whole being there as well. So if you're a healer, if you're a real healer, then what you know is whole. What you know is wholeness. What you know is wellness. So for just a moment, you can't see anything other than that. You have to see the wholeness, the wellness that's in that person. And your power or your influence as the healer is to help the person see that for themselves so that they can allow that vibration, for lack of a better word, to come in and let their body do what it needs to do. Because as a healer, whether it's hands-on energy medicine or whatever any of those other holistic modalities are, what is it that we're really doing? I mean, are we really doing this hocus-pocus stuff? I wouldn't say so. I would say I'm more of a witness to what the patient is doing.
Well, we've talked about it before. You
right.
can't give someone health. I mean, you can't give someone sanity either. Lord knows that one.
It's too bad. I'd put it in a plane and fly over like a crop duster.
Yeah, let's get a bottle of sanity. But the thing is that what you're getting at is the individual walking in with that self-knowledge, with that awareness, so that they can cultivate it with a practitioner that's going to support that over time, which is equally rare that the client walks in thinking that they have anything to bring to the table, so to speak. They walk in thinking they're broken, thinking they need to be fixed, things like that. And what happens over time is that they become almost subordinated to the system. And as I've said before, if you want to get smart, don't look at the educational system. If you want to get healthy, don't look at the healthcare system. They're designed for the opposite. They're designed to basically allow a lot of driftwood to come through, and they will manage you from cradle to grave, condition by condition, all the way through, because their responsibility, like you just said before, is to move product. It's not to get you healthy or get you awake or get you to be responsible for yourself. That's on you. So it's more a proportionate thing. Like, you could do the greatest energy work in the world with someone who doesn't take that responsibility on, and they're like, you know, they're kind of like the old static thing with the balloon at the birthday party. You rub it against your head, stick it on the wall. And after a while, that vibe kind of dissipates, and they'll slide down the wall. That's when, you know, and we'll get into this for a minute, because now you see the opposite happening, the complementary medicine coming in, where you have MDs, dyed-in-the-wool MDs, allopathic by nature, allopathic by practice, going up the turnpike, you know, and plop it in some hotel over there like in Poughkeepsie for the weekend, and taking a 200-hour course in acupuncture, and in the course of a couple of months, they now have a different service to offer people, a medical form of acupuncture that would take you or I 4 years to get certified, you know, on the traditional route. So how do you feel about that in terms of now that you're out in the world, you know, freshly minted and going out to serve people, that the MD basically can pluck any one of these 240 allied health disciplines that are out there as just another service, just another can on the shelf, where the average person has to go through, you know, 2 or 3 years of training.
How do I feel about it? I don't like it. I don't like it one bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, it kind of goes back, it kind of tag teams onto what we were saying before about the average person. We've been more or less socialized to give over our power and turn it over to the doctor who's going to fix us with the pill or the procedure or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But to me, what I've always felt, at least in my, you know, recent adulthood, I would say, is that real healing is when someone has a different experience of themselves. That's when the real healing happens. So to come into my office, let's say, whatever it is that I'm practicing, whatever holistic medicine, let's just say it is that I'm practicing, I am seeing that person not as, okay, get up on the table, move your arm like this, oh, you have this, and I took a 200-hour course or 250-hour course, so I'm going to pop these little stainless steel needles in you and you'll be fine. No, that's not it, because I'm not seeing you as that whole being. I haven't learned the science, the art, the philosophy, and now I'm using your words, Mark, from a conversation we had the other day about, you know, and I'm talking of learning the theory, the technique, the reasoning behind a discipline that you cannot get in 250 hours of course study.
Right. You can learn the art, like they used to say in chiropractic college, you know, in their typical, you know, kind of Pennsylvania hick accent, they'd be like, you could teach a monkey to adjust in about 2 hours, you know, but it takes, you know, 4 years to make that monkey a chiropractor, you know, that kind of a thing. So it's like
right.
to learn the not just the art of adjusting, but also the science behind it, the deductive reasoning involved, and also the philosophy, the lifestyle that you're trying to cultivate with the client. That's the discipline. And, it, you know, Ayurvedic has its tenets, homeopathy has its discipline, and allopathic medicine has, quote-unquote, a discipline, too. Their reasoning is inductive. That's why I say quote-unquote, because when you have inductive reasoning, everything goes up the chimney instead of down. You don't start with a major premise. You sort of end with 55 minor ones, and they just keep making up different. That's why medicine, when it expands, if you notice, it develops branches. It's always expanding because its tentacles get into every part of your life, because allopathic is all about going against the symptom and fighting the environment off, and they perceive host and environment and host and germ as basically oppositional rather than being living in harmony with each other, where the other worlds, that other six continents, have a whole completely different philosophy. So, all right, so it's, you know, we're kind of gone right around the horn here a little bit. So you're entering practice soon in New York City, right?
I am. I am going to be practicing in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Also soon to hope to open practice up in Westchester.
Yeah, I might know where I got spots for you.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, okay. All right, so do you have any kind of a contact number yet or anything you want to give out to people that are looking to get in touch with you down in Manhattan?
I can give out a phone number. I'm going to be practicing down in the Flatiron District over on 21st
okay.
Fifth Avenue, and I can give out a number to make appointments with me.
All right.
The number is 917-334-8907.
Okay.
So just give a call. And if you mention this show when you call, I'll give you $20 off your initial session.
A little naked summer discount, all right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
All right, so in closing, because we like to do this at the end, because sometimes we do it in the beginning, we're confused, but what do you think, going out into the world now, day one is going to be the most common misconception that you're going to have to overcome for your clients to get the highest benefit of your services? About you or about what you do or about what they're dealing with, just, you know.
I think one of the most common misconceptions, and I'll say at least about acupuncture, because that's going to be one of my chief modalities among others, is that acupuncture is only good for just a couple of things. Oh,
mm-hmm.
I hurt my back. Or do those herbs really work? Or does acupuncture really work? And I would say Chinese medicine has been around for about 4,000 years. Treating diseases before we even gave names to those diseases,
mm-hmm.
quite
mm-hmm.
effectively, I must say, I might add.
And again, they didn't care if you had a pimple or you had cancer. All they knew was the chi wasn't moving right, and that's basically what they dealt with. And you just had the degree and extent of CNET moving very well, and they were either more aggressive or more kind of like pastel in the way that they had approached the system. And as you were telling me in that same conversation was, on the other side of the world, they actually paid the doctor to keep them well. They didn't pay them when they were sick.
That's right.
Which would be hilarious here.
That's how it was done. And, you know, acupuncture is just one of the pillars of Chinese medicine.
Right.
So often people are not only recommended, come get acupuncture, but also take the herbs, practice qigong, practice proper dietary nutrition, get some tuina, which is the Chinese therapeutic massage technique.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, yoga, all that stuff.
Right,
I mean,
right.
That's what I'm saying. There's a cultural aspect to it, as you were talking about at the beginning, us being socially conditioned to think the doctor knows best. There's a, because you get a homogenous culture like that, they all get up and do their Tai Chi in the morning, and, you know, out in the public square. It was common practice. What's common practice here is get up and pour the sugar in the bowl, pour the dairy product on top of that, you know, turn on the TV, get stimmed, and get out in the world and you know, compete, like you said before. So we're more a population and a mindset and a culture that's all about exertion, and we want longevity, but we have this sort of youth-oriented mindset, so that if you're constantly in the push-out and in the yang side of the coin, when you run out of yang and all you're left with is yin, and you don't know what yin is, you fight it like hell, and all the way down the mountain on the other side of the wave, you think you're sick, when actually your body's just trying to recover.
Right.
It's just trying to breathe out. And so
mm-hmm.
I always tell people, I mean, the fastest and best therapy I know is to just simply hold your breath when you're fried on any level, because that's the priority, is to keep the rhythm going. And I think you've established, going from where you were to where you are now, that there is two sides of the wave, and I think you're going to be enjoying yourself all the way down the mountain, as it were, in helping people out of the valley of normality. Ooh, wow, I ended with a metaphor.
So.
Yeah, all right, Abe, thanks a lot for joining us here, and anyone you know, looking for Amy Hausman down the city, you can contact us here at Naked Summer. We'll pass the address and stuff on to you, and we'll be putting it up on Naked Summer Nation. She'll have our own little discussion group for this show, so you can ask some more questions about her glorious past and her happy future. We'll do it that way. So thanks for joining us here on Naked Summer, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Amy.
Val, thanks for everything.
Good stuff.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
She's going to be good. Wait till she gets her office going. It's going to be good stuff.
What was I trying to say? Prosperous? I can't say it.
Prosperity?
Like a prosperous future. That's what I was trying to say. Prosperous.
Yeah.
Obscenity? I said, sound like Bulworth now.
Oh, God.
I sound like, what's his name in Bulworth? Obscenity? All right. So, speaking of that, the Costas rant still says stop here. I don't know why.
Oh, it's because you played it. You know what? See if you can bump it up in volume first.
Oh, all right.
Here, I get it. I got it.
All right, go ahead.
Let me see.
Costas.
Hold on.
I can't believe this. This is like this. Out of all the things that dripped out of that show, this is what made it to YouTube first.
Of course.
How could I not believe it?
Fuckface. So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's, douchebag.
Oh, boy. Not George Carlin, he. Doesn't sound comfortable saying those words. It just sounds hilarious. Like, we talked about hypocrisy a lot at the beginning of the hour, and here's the authenticity. You hear in Amy's voice how when she was doing her job as a production person, she was authentic doing that. She's authentic doing this. Except now there's an alignment of value systems. Like she said, she was in two worlds at once. And I think a lot of people do that when it comes to certain conditions, especially when you're dealing with your parents or you're dealing with little kids, that you want to protect them. And you want to do this, like, heroic intervention. But what happens sometimes is you take away their own personal power to do it for themselves. And whether they're learning how to walk or learning how to fight off a cold, there has to be some space for that personal freedom to let them go through it.
Right.
And, you know, but I think there's just an inherent fear that if you just, you know, let them drown in their own, you know, fears and symptoms, that they'll never come back. I think that's more something that would land up on your couch under the
uh-huh.
category of projection.
Right. Well, one of the women in my health chat room said her daughter, who's I think 5 or so, had an ear infection, and of course the doctor wanted to zippity-doo-dah right to the antibiotics,
mm-hmm.
and she asked how bad it was, and they agreed that the kid could wait it out a little bit and let her immune system kick in, and she didn't need them. You know, well, stop writing them the damn prescriptions so fast. They give them third-generation antibiotics.
Well, the average patient for a typical SAPE out there with any symptom is about this long. Ready? Here it comes.
Clap on, clap off,
not clapper.
That's about it. If the system isn't gone that amount of time, then they basically panic.
I wasn't expecting that. That was pretty funny. You're an
ass. Well, sometimes I get away with one.
Hey, we have something going on tomorrow at the office.
Right. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your thong, Sapes. It's a body image upgrade tomorrow here at Soma Space.
Mm-hmm.
For the big woo shop, the fourth of the fifth of the series, Merciless End next week, where we put the pedal to the metal and look at your perception of yourself, and there's surprising evidence between the way males and females perceive themselves and what they're sorting for in terms of the way they want to project their image to the public. So we'll be hanging out here from 11 to 1. Anyone want to pop by? It's $20 if you pre-register at somaspace.org, and it's $30 at the door because, we take the $10 extra just to punish you for not being
That's
proactive.
Right.
Yeah, we're going
right.
to retire on that $10, believe me.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, the videos are posted for the other three that we've done over on somaspace.org.
I never posted the third one.
Well,
if
you did
camera.
Post it, the, well, what? All right, the first two were there already.
Yeah.
So you can get the first two. We did one on allergies, we did one on habits, and last week we did one on mating behavior. Which is quite interesting. So you can check that out. Next week is a parenting without panicking. So all you Ritalin moms out there can that are on the Prozac, the Balance.
And dads.
And the dads. Well, the dads are on. Well, they're on Arizona iced tea like me. We'll be talking about that, about the biological aspects of parenting and some of the things that are coming in about that, about self-perception for the child and the parents. So we'll get into lots of stuff. And pedaling forward, we have other things planned for the summer. And this is an ever-evolving little piece of clay we have spinning in the clouds here at Naked
true.
Summer. So,
very
who knows
true.
What comes next.
Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. So next week, speaking of not knowing what's coming next,
mm-hmm.
next week we have a SAPE that I am going to be chomping at the bit to talk to. I don't even know his name. What's the actor's name?
Who do we have on? I forgot. I forgot who we have.
Lord. Amygdala boy.
Oh, is he next
yes.
week? Oh,
that's
man.
Right.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
I think so.
Yeah. Oof. We have 2 minutes left. Can you do a fast somascope or a...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on.
I don't know. My little board went nuts.
Ugh.
Why is it so loud?
Well, because it's Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, right, I forgot. Free. Let's see if I can get this one. It's probably with
the damn you, Internet!
There you go. so we're in an XO week. Cinco de Mayo is the next new moon, the middle cycle of the spring, where we shift into rage as the primary emotion, which is notoriously Anto, but think of a baby panicking, this is Philo season, and they're enraged, which is basically a protective mechanism to deal with the unknown. So we're ramping into that with a little sprinkle of paprika suspicion from the exomoon, which is going to peak on Monday on Cinco de Mayo. So we join you next week. We will be standing on the Philo moon on May 7th.
Oh, no. That's my mother's birthday.
Oh, well, little known facts.
Mm-hmm.
As we ramp into that, there's going to be just a little vibe in the air all around the corn of sort of agitation, anxiety, kind of that middle spring thing where we're kind of getting through the heat and we're preparing for summer. And we're far enough away from the winter vibe where all the fear's gone, and now it's getting into where we're starting to blend into the summer vibe a little bit. So we're shifting from we could talk about this with Amy a little bit, where we have the liver gallbladder circuit, which is the wood circuit, dealing with birth energy, things like that, getting into the fire element. So we're going from the frying pan to the fire, which is interesting because the summer, it deals a lot with loneliness. It deals a lot with that empty heart feeling. And so you're getting almost kind of a nude, like a peak pressure there between the anger in the spring and that feeling of emptiness in the summer coming up. So we'll talk about it a little more next week. But for the most part, everyone just pay attention to those suspicious minds you have. And if you haven't experienced it, then you're out of sync, which means when it hits you, it's going to be like a box of rocks.
You just made it. 5 seconds.
Oh, travel light, guys. See you next week.
Bye.
Lost Hope Radio.